Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Network. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
Welcome, listeners. This is Divya Parekh, your today's show of Beyond Confidence show. We are ready to take our lives, our personal lives, and professional lives up next notch, up to the next level. And today, I am very excited to have Barb Van Loon as our esteemed speaker. It's a privilege to have Barb on the show. Barb is a very popular speaker. She's currently a criminal justice professor at Washtenaw Community College in Ann Arbor, Michigan. She's a seasoned writer. She's the author of the Seraphim Trilogy and Finding the Best Dance Instruction, Look Before You Leap. She was the editor of Bradley's Communication Publicity Guide, entertainment writer for Today, and entertainment correspondent for the Sun newspapers. Her articles have been published in magazines including Hopscotch and Chicago Parent. Now a little bit about myself. I am Divya. I'm an internationally known leadership and organizational wellness coach. I head the DP Coaching Group that helps professionals, coaches, youth, executives, and entrepreneurs embrace their inner confidence and develop competency skills to achieve desired potential and success. Because I've had scientific and coaching background, I have developed a system that has created the art of developing as well as living the effective science-based leadership programs. And these programs engage the participants through experiential techniques. I am a co-author of an international Amazon best-selling book, The Voyage to Your Vision. And without further ado, I would like to welcome Barbara Van Loon. Welcome, Barb. How are you doing today?
Well, I am fine. Thank you so much. And thank you for having me as a guest.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. So before we jump into questions, because I have so many questions for you, can you share a little bit about yourself with our audience?
Sure. As you can tell by the book that
Hello, listeners. Looks like we may have lost our esteemed guest, and we will be coming on shortly again. So until our guest comes on board again, we will be sharing with you today a lot about children, like, you know, how the kids break the rules and how do parents react. And we have our guest back on the lines again. So thank you again for joining us.
I thank you again. I'm sorry that we lost you there. You can tell, I guess, by my kind of diverse writing background that I have kind of a strange path to criminal justice. I started out as a Broadway performer, which is kind of a weird career, but it's something I always was passionate about and always wanted to do, thus the dance book. And I kind of went from there into corporate America and did a variety of other things and ended up, I have three children, well, they're not children anymore, they're all adults, thank goodness, I have three kids, and my youngest decided during his teenage years to get himself in quite a bunch of trouble. He really went off the path, and so that kind of took me into the criminal justice field. As a typical parent, I wanted to find out, what did I do wrong? What could I have done differently? Why was he offending? All those questions that you have as a parent, because of course you're devastated when your child starts, you know, doing things that are unlawful or incorrect. And so I went on a quest and ended up going back to college at a later age and getting 2 degrees, one in criminal psychology and one in criminal justice, and found that I was really good at helping kids, not only my own, to get through the challenges that he was going through, but also other kids. And so I ended up becoming a juvenile probation officer and a juvenile corrections officer, and also a court-appointed special advocate working with neglected and abused kids. And my caseload were teenagers. So I found that I really had a passion for helping kids. And I also taught high school, criminal justice in high school, in a Title I school. And now I teach college. So it kind of took me full circle, but it actually was my son's challenges that brought me to where I am today.
That definitely makes sense, because whatever is close to home, it really strikes deep within the heart. And when it strikes deep within the heart, we get attached to that cause and we want to make a difference in the world. So you did mention that your son's events took you to this path. Now, you know, from what I've known you, and what I've known about you, Barb, you know, you are a wonderful person. Now, so many times parents end up thinking that, you know, we have raised our children right, we have done everything we could, and yet sometimes kids get off track. That does not mean they're bad kids. Yet, you know, this question always comes up. What happened that our kids got off track? Was
right.
there something wrong with us? Like, are we bad parents? So, some light up.
Right, and that is a real complicated question, because the immediate reaction of people that are not involved in the family are to look directly at the parents, because it must be the parents' fault. You know, bad kids must have bad parents, and that's not the case. And I take full responsibility myself as a parent for some of the things I could have done differently. We went through a divorce at a very tender age for him that, you know, didn't help the situation at all and probably was a catalyst. But, I mean, there are many, many parents that are very, very good parents. I mean, he had two loving parents and, you know, lived in a great neighborhood and he went to a great school, had great siblings. And he just decided to do what he decided to do. And later on in his life, I actually asked him, and he said, Mom, you know, you really didn't have anything to do with it. I knew what was right. I knew what was wrong, and I had made those choices. So the kids have to take some responsibility. The parents have to take some responsibility. Society needs to take some responsibility, because we fail kids when they start getting into trouble by not diverting them and not giving them the programming and the help that they need. Sometimes the schools have to take the responsibility. I think it's a collaborative effort to raise good kids. And, you know, yes, sometimes bad kids do have parents that need a lot of help and a lot of assistance to become better parents, but that's not always the case.
Mm-hmm. That is true, that it's a collaborative effort, because, you know, as they say, it takes a village to raise a child.
Yes, that's true.
And, you know, I've heard you mention that most of the kids break the laws and rules. Could you expand on that a little bit more?
All kids do break the laws and rules. In fact, I have an exercise that I do with my students, and I'll walk in and I'll first of all let them know I can't arrest them, because they get a little nervous when I start asking questions like this. But I ask them, so how many of you kids, raise your hand, have ever done, and I'll start down a list, how many of you have ever done drugs? How many of you have ever drank? How many of you have ever downloaded something from the internet that you didn't pay for? How many of you have ever harassed someone on the internet? How many of you have ever used somebody's car without permission? Skipped school? And I go through this amazingly long list of things, and prank calls, and, you know, Oh, everything from sending pictures of yourself half naked over the internet, which is now against a lot of texting, plagiarizing papers. And I go through this whole thing, and almost, in fact, I don't think I have had a class where someone has not raised their hand for at least one, if not almost all, of the offenses that I kind of dole out. And I mean, as a parent, you can ask yourself the same thing. We all break the law. How many times have you rolled through a stop sign? How many times have you had a cocktail and then, you know, too many cocktails and gotten behind the wheel of a car? How many times have you texted while you drove? And there's so many different scenarios that they're unlawful, but we all do them. And the difference is that of the 1.5, it's about 1.5 million kids that get arrested every year under the age of 18, there's also the rest of them have not gotten caught. So we're talking about a lot of kids, and that's really what makes the difference between a juvenile delinquent and someone who has done the same crime but didn't get caught is generally the discretion of the police officer or the victim of the crime as to whether or not they decided to call in law enforcement.
Mm. I love the exhaustive list that you came up with, that because we don't think about it in that way, including mm-hmm. parents. As parents, we will definitely so many times what we have done is, you know, you are in a rush, you are, whether you're going to your job or you're driving your kids to school, or it could be some simple thing as yourself going for a meeting, you're late and you do step it up. And sometimes if the speed limit is 45, you will be driving at 55. And then, yes, we do pay the tickets and the insurance goes up. All of us do tend to do some things here or there. However, in the case of teens, it's a very well-known fact that their brains develop with executive functions pretty late, which is usually around 22 to 23. So is that one of the causes? And besides that, what are the other causes that makes one teen to make a bad choice while another doesn't? Because as far as the brain development is concerned, that rational executive decision-making brain is not there in any of the teens. So what is the
Correct.
Main root that helps the teens make that rational decision?
There are so many, as many different teens, there are that many different answers to the question. But, and you're absolutely right, a lot of the bad choices are just typical teen behavior. And I know parents don't like to hear that. But the job of a teenager is to break away from their parents and to start trying to grow up and starting to make choices one way or the other to learn from those choices so that they can develop into a law-abiding, you know, adult. So they are going to try things, and as terrifying as that is to most parents, your kids are going to try to drink, they're going to smoke, they're going to try to do drugs. There's a lot of things that most of them are going to do. What happens in some kids, and they have a predisposition, and it's not always triggered, but some kids are, you know, are risk takers, some are not. You know, there's always the leader, the one that's going to say, you know, everybody wants to jump off the roof and he's the first one. Some kids are just wired that way. What makes it stop, I believe, at least what could make it stop, is proper information. And even with that, all the kids know that they're not supposed to drink. They know that they're not supposed to drink and drive. I mean, there's enough ad campaigns out there to let them know that. There's a lot of things out there that they know they're not supposed to do, and they are going to try them. Peer pressure is huge. It's really, really big for teens because all teens want to do is, you know, be accepted by other teens. And many, many times one teen who would not normally make the bad choice will be kind of not bullied but pushed into it by their friends because they want to be part of the gang. They want to be part of the group. And also, you know, morality does play a strong role in whether or not they're going to offend. And sometimes the kids that have a stronger moral background, maybe a religious background, and they have a better modeling system at home where their parents are not doing things, so they don't think it's acceptable, that sometimes can stop them. But there really is no clear cut. If we had that crystal ball that we could figure out why the kids are doing it, why one doesn't and the other doesn't, you know, we'd be able to solve the problem that we have in the juvenile justice system. But a lot of it is normal teen behavior, and it's just that they have to learn to stop. And they have to learn that if they do something and they have a consequence, that the consequence is strong enough for them that they decide that the choice is just not something that they're going to do again. It's kind of like putting your finger in the flame, you know, once it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
They go, okay, I don't like that. I'm not going to do that again. That wasn't a good choice.
So what I'm hearing is that either it's a moral choice, that they're raised in such a fashion where they are deciding to do the right thing, knowing that this is the right choice to do, regardless of where am I at, whatever the social pressure is, because the pressure is so much on nowadays, where it's not only the clothes, it's not only the acceptance in the social circle, it's about being a popular kid, where it is so crucial to be accepted in that inner circle of popular kids or inner circle of those kids that are on the top of the list, that people end up doing things because they don't want to stand against the crowd. They don't want to be the mavericks who are doing their own trailblazing. So in that fashion, from what I'm hearing, is that it's important to have that moral background, which we as parents can definitely give them. Now, this again, we say that it's a moral question, and then some kids are just the peer pressure. So this is all these things bring into equation that how can these kids stand up knowing that they will not be accepted in the circle? How can they stand up against something? So, for example, today I was in a team meeting, in a team leadership meeting, and somebody shared that when a kid is bullied, and then there is a kid who has been molested, there is a new study that was done with both the kids, like the kids who are bullied and the kids who are molested, and MRI was done on their brains, and it was found that the impact was same. So when this is the case, what can we do to help our children develop that self-confidence and self-esteem where they can stand up and say, something is going on, I'm not going to be part of it. If you're bullying some other kid, how can the teens go about it? How can parents help them?
I think that one of the issues that we're dealing with a lot today is that a lot of parents are not really present in their kids' lives. And I'm going to blame technology for a good portion of this and our crazy, hurried society. They're not really linking into what the kids are. They're not watching what they're really doing and how they're reacting to the things that the kids do. There doesn't seem to be enough praise for the small things and encouragement and praise when they do the small things right. And that needs to start at a very, very young age. There should always be 3 times more praise than there should be, you know, criticism for a child. They always have to do something right. Even let's say a child comes home, past curfew, but they actually called before, or they actually did show up on time, but they, you know, maybe were under the influence. At least they did something right. They showed up okay. You know, they got in the door, or they called, or they were smart enough to have someone else drive them home, or whatever that is. And that needs to really be brought out as that was a great choice. But now we need to talk mm-hmm. about some of the other things. And I think people forget to split that. And they also, I think a huge problem is that parents, because they get frustrated with teenagers, because they are frustrating little buggers, they are, is that they don't separate the child from the behavior. The child is not bad. The behavior was bad. And if you can separate that, then the child understands that it's not the criticism is not being directed at them. It's being directed at the behavior. And that makes a big difference, because then their self-esteem is still there. As long as they're unconditionally loved, even if they're doing some horrendous things, but they still know that they're unconditionally loved, but it was behavior that's not acceptable, that can create a different kind of child. And I always told my son, even when I got visited in jail, you know, I wasn't happy with what he did, but I will always love him unconditionally, and we will work through this. But I'm not going to let him have a pass for the behavior, because that's not the way the world works. And I think that the self-esteem comes from getting to know your child and encouraging them in the areas that they find exciting, that you might find exciting, but something that they really like to do, and making sure that they're getting some praise along the way, and then separating the behavior from the child.
Mm-hmm. I like what you have said. 3 to 5 positive things for 1 negative. Because when we provide positive enforcement to our children, and that during the real time, when we are providing them real time feedback, then these positive reinforcements become the engines of positive emotions, which lead to building of the self-esteem. And also, another key thing that you brought up was that separate the behavior from the child. Do not label the child. So when you're just calling out the behavior, you're holding them accountable. And yet at the same time, as you mentioned, as how you supported your son, that you're loving them unconditionally. You are treating them non-judgmentally, and yet you're holding them accountable, because today's child is a man or a woman of tomorrow. So having that great combination not only teaches them independence, because now they are learning to take responsibility for their actions. It teaches them accountability, and yet at the same time, it gives them confidence that, here, you know, when I do good, I'm recognized, and when I'm not doing good, or when I'm not taking the right action, it has repercussions. So definitely,
Absolutely. Those
are great points. Mm-hmm. Great points, Barb.
Good, thank you.
Moving further into conversation, we've talked about how to build the confidence and the self-esteem to stand up for yourself and come into your own. How is confidence connected to bullying? Because bullying is such a big problem in our society today. It's not only very prevalent in schools, high schools, universities, and it's also present in form of soft bullying in corporate and workplaces as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, bullying is a huge problem. In fact, it's almost epidemic at this point, and it's actually also done on the internet, which makes it twice as hard to control, because it's already out there and you can't pull it back. And by the time you get to it, you can't do much about it. Kids that are not confident, as it is with adults, as you'll know, the people that are constantly trying to make themselves feel better about themselves are the ones that are always trying to one-up the next person, trying to show up the next person, constantly talking about their, you know, how much better they are than someone else, which then, of course, has the flip side, which makes the other person feel bad, and they're constantly picking on someone that they don't feel meets up to their standards. And so it happens in the office place, and it also happens, obviously, with kids. And it happens in the sandbox. It starts as young as when the kids start pushing each other around. You need to step in, and you need to show the difference in what that feels like to someone, you know, when someone's feelings are hurt. There's a lack of empathy that kids have, and they end up not having any empathy towards someone who's different, someone who might not have the same maybe skill set or the same looks that they have or the same size that they have. And so what happens is the confidence is depleted on both ends. The confidence of the child that is bullied, the victim, is completely devastated. It goes down even further. And then you have the overconfidence, and I hate to use the word confidence because I think of it as just arrogance, on the side of the person that is perpetrating the offense, where it's kind of playing back and forth. It's seeing who's on the teeter-totter, who can go higher. And then the poor person that is being bullied has really no choice, especially if peer pressure goes and you start getting a gang. you get kids together that are constantly picking on the same child. If you have confidence, if you have a bunch of kids that are competent, they're going to stand up and they're going to kind of form their own group, and they're going to find their own uniqueness in their own group. And they will be able to overcome that, and they'll be able to stand up for them. And I do have seen a lot of older kids, though, that have just recently started to, you know, take stand against it, because it has become such a major, major issue.
Mm-hmm. So I recall you saying, you know, that today's kids are lacking empathy, or you see the decrease in empathy, and actually it was, I do not recall exactly whether it was CNN or CNBC. They were recently showing a study where they were measuring empathy in college graduates, and they found that the empathy has decreased by 30% due to increased use of social media, because the connection between human beings, even
absolutely.
So I'll share a story. Like, you know, one of my colleagues, he was sharing a story. We were talking about social media and texting. His daughters were sitting on the couch, and they are giggling, and he comes into the room, and he's like, okay, they're not talking, and they're still giggling to each other. So he goes and sits in front of them and says, what are you all laughing about? They said, oh, we are talking. And he's just sitting there dumbfounded. There is this old conversation of face-to-face talk. So you're sitting side by side, and yet there is no communication, which
so they were
we
texting
need.
Back and forth to each other? Wow.
Yeah, they were texting back and forth to each other. So that, you know, looking into the other person's eyes, understanding the body language, because we all have mirror neurons, and our mirror neurons will mimic the other person's emotions. So that connection is needed.
And I think it's only going to get worse. You're absolutely right. Social media is giving us a huge problem with lack of communication between the kids and the parents, because the parents are as hooked on their social media as the kids are now. And, you know, it seems to be more important to talk to an inanimate object than it does to each other or someone that's right across the table from you.
That is so true. So we have discussed about social media being one of the reasons that communication has decreased between parents and teens. And of course, you know, as teens become older, as kids are transitioning into teens, you know, communication decreases even further. So why is it that there is such a huge drop in communication between parents and emerging teens?
I think it's normal. Part of it is normal. Kids don't want to talk to their parents. Their parents aren't interesting. They really don't care about the behavior, you know, what their parents think in the long run. They do it in the big things. But, I mean, as far as the small stuff, their friends are really where their core group is. That's who they want to be accepted by. So on the big issues, they do want their parents to be proud of them and all those other wonderful things. But I think that is kind of a normal break where, again, kids, you know, are trying to develop their own identities. And that's another one of the issues. A lot of parents think that this, you know, they go from having a child that they can control and who they're steering into certain things. They put them in certain sports. They put them in dance classes. They put them in piano. They put them in wherever they think they belong. And all of a sudden, these kids get these interests that they don't even understand, much less embrace. You know, all of a sudden, you've got kids that are skateboarding, and they're doing dubstep music, and, you know, you name it. And it's things that the parents can't even understand. And they don't know how to communicate with them. So rather than try to get in there and learn about what it is that these kids are engaged in, or what really, you know, turns them on, they end up backing away because it's difficult times sometimes. I mean, their music is not always what we accept as great music. Their movie choices are sometimes horrendous to sit through. You know, their clothing choices, their hair choices, their piercings, their tattoos. Heaven only knows there's a long, long list of the things that the kids are doing that parents are wishing that they wouldn't do. But if you really stop and you look at a child, and I always like to use a skateboarder because my son was a skateboarder, and the skateboarders were on the fringe, and they were not accepted by the community that we were in. And These kids were, they were kids that just didn't like to do major football or the major sports, and they liked to do the riskier stuff, the snowboarding, skateboarding, that kind of stuff. And once we got the kids involved and I watched them, I would take them to the skate park so I would learn more about the skills and the sport. And the kids actually, they didn't have a skate park, so we ended up getting a committee together and we let the kids design one for the city so that they were actually involved in doing something and we knew where they were at. It was constructive. They had, you know, championships, all kinds of things like that. So you can take and divert things into something that's more positive if you start to know what it's about. You know, skateboarding is not scary. Tagging buildings with spray paint is not scary. They probably are an artist. They probably have, you know, they want to paint. You just have to look at what they're doing and get involved and learn about it. Listen to their music. Play the video games with them so that you know what they're doing. Watch the movies that they're watching so that you get a handle on who this new creature is that's come into your life. Because they are. They turn into some very strange things. It's like, who are these people? But that's really what it is. You know, you look at them from that nice little child that you had that was so cute that used to hold your hand and walk across the street, you know, and had a nice little haircut, and now they walk in with a mohawk. It's like, oh, my gosh, who is this person?
Well, that is true. And that is the key. It's about becoming engaged and involved in your kid's life and finding out what are the interests and taking interest in that, because it's important to keep those communication channels open. If the communication channels are not open, you don't know what's going on. And
sure. And one of the best ways is to have your kid help you with your social media.
Mm-hmm.
And help
you
with your technology, because they're so much better at it than we are.
I
can't tell you how many times I've asked my grandson to help me fix the remote control. You know what I'm saying? They're really so much better at this than we are. So if you give them, first of all, the respect that they know something, and then help them develop those skills, you know, you really can develop a relationship with them where they see that you respect the fact that they actually have a brain that can work independently from you.
Mm-hmm. It's about respecting them. I like that. Very true. They're a person on their own right. They're just not little people or your children who are dependent on you. These are people who are going to be the next generation leaders, and this is the time when they're developing their mind. So it's about, I see parents as, or I've seen myself as, almost being Michelangelo. All the potential and everything is in there, and all we need to do is just be there and let them unravel as fantastic and excellent human beings that they are. And we as societies, we as parents, do tend to layer our children with expectations and pressures.
Sure.
And whatnot.
And if you have a lot of children, I challenge your audience to take a look. If you have multiple children, then all three or four or five of them are different. Everyone has a different set of, you know, of interests and skill sets. And they all need to be developed independently. And most of them are not like you. If you really look at it, how many of you of them actually went into the same career path as their parents or actually wanted to do what their parents did, unless their parents were doing something really cool, like a rock star or something. But, you know, I mean, generally, the kids are off doing something totally different because, you know, it's something different and it's something new for them. They've been living with you now for 14, 15 years and have seen what you've done, and they want to do something different.
Absolutely. We are almost halfway through our show, and I would like to share with you some of the upcoming episodes. So tomorrow, on Wednesday at 12 p.m., we have our show with Jen Jaffe. She is interviewing Carlos Figueredo, talking about your best life. How can you achieve the best life with Jen and Carlos? Additionally, it is, so this is on Wednesday, listeners, at 10:14. And another show I would like to share with you is, it's going to be on 10:14, it's Sunday at 8 p.m. Mark My Words with life and business coach Mark Shaw. And you will enjoy both of the shows, so please do join in our radio show host and come see what they're planning to share. So going back to our show, so it has been phenomenal information so far, Barb. Now, moving into, we're talking about the communication. There are some children who are very quiet. And again, you know, we as parents, we as societies tend to label people as being introverted and forgetting that, you know, sometimes people don't want to talk. They may just sit there, observe, and listen. So that's, so what I've found is that, you know, one of the key things is finding, as you mentioned, knowing your child, really knowing that they're silent. They're just not talking because they don't have anything to say. It could just be a matter of choice. But then there are certain kids who have a tendency to be very quiet, even though they have a lot of thoughts on their mind, they cannot speak up. So what can parents do to help the silent teens develop communication skills?
Well, I don't think that actually everyone needs to develop that outward large communication skills. They do need to be able to express themselves and express themselves appropriately and be able to join in conversations. I think there's a couple different ways that you can do that. First, I think when those silent ones kind of get pushed to the back, especially if you have multiple kids, the quiet ones, the one that never gets the words in, and everybody else is really big around them, and they're just sitting. And I think the parent has to referee to a certain point and almost be a debate coach. You know, there are rules in debate. When people are talking, this is how we, you know, you get to get your point in. Now, what do you think? And everyone, if someone interrupts, to put a halt to that. And say, you know, your sister or brother's got a, you know, a great mind. Let's find out what they think and let them kind of express themselves. I think a lot of the silent teens are writers. I think they like to communicate in different ways. They like to communicate through music. Sometimes they like to communicate through their dance and through the arts. And that is a great way to get their, first of all, their self-confidence up, and they can develop their communication skills that way because they're with other people that are very similar to themselves. So I think that's one of the good techniques that you can use. And again, sometimes kids just don't want to talk. You know, and the last person they want to talk to is you because you're not interesting. You're just not interesting.
Oh, definitely
whether you like
not.
Or not, you're not interesting. Nobody cares. Parents are not cool, and they try to be cool. They try to be what I call a frerent, which is a friend and a parent mixed together, which you don't want to do that. You know, they have friends. Let them have their own friends. Sometimes silence, you have to be careful. That is a monitoring technique that I'm always very cautious about being in juvenile justice, that if your kids are too quiet sometimes, if it is in their personality, that's one thing. But if all of a sudden a very precocious child becomes very quiet, we all know what that sound is like, I can't hear you, what are you doing? That's sometimes something that you have to monitor. But they're slow bloomers. They will come out of it. I think it's putting kids together that support each other, not putting a very quiet child in a very voracious place with a lot of stuff going on where the kids are really noisy and, you know, really rambunctious. Silent kids need more silent activities. They just will develop and they'll find their voice.
Mm-hmm. They will find their voice. Very true.
Yep.
So I know you have a book coming out, and could you share, before we go to your book, 10 parenting rules so that parents can get their kids to listen and communicate with them?
Oh, absolutely. These are my favorite, and it works every time. And there are 10. And they're in the book, so and they're pretty quick. In fact, actually, I'm going to put it on CD so people can actually listen to it before they pick their kids up. I'll do the rules real quick, and then we can kind of go through it. The first one is listen to your teen, and it might seem obvious, but parents just don't do it. Say, I'm the parent, you have to listen to me syndrome, and it excludes the other person from the conversation. You have to have a two-way conversation with your child. And you can't have selective hearing and only hear what you want to hear either, or the negative stuff. You've got to listen to every word and listen to the tone of their voice and their intensity and hear what really gets them pumped up and ramped up. You know, you got to listen to your kid and be present and listen to them. And and then the second one is let a sleeping dog lie. Don't try to talk to a kid when they are bad to a kid when they're not fully awake. We're all really, you know, trying to get them from a dead sleep to out to the bus in 3 minutes. You're going to get a fight. And, I mean, I don't know about you, but I need my half an hour of my coffee and a nice slow rise in the morning. You know, so watch your timing with kids. Their hormones are raging. They're tired. They're sleeping a lot because they're growing. You know, they're self-centered. They're moody. This is just what kids are. You know, their friends and relationships are more important. You know, and the zits on their forehead are more important than you are. So, you know, you've got to be careful. You've got to watch your timing with kids. Don't expect them to just jump when you want them to. The third one, look at the big picture. And I think that's good advice in every situation anyway. You know, what do you really want to accomplish when you're after your child to do something? Is it really important that they empty the dishwasher right now, or can you wait until they get off the phone in 10 minutes and let them do that so that there is kind of mutual respect going on? You know, are you looking for information? Do you want their feedback? Do you want compliance? What is the, you know, are you giving them a mandate? What is the big picture? What do you really, really want? Because if you're not careful and you're not sure exactly why what you're trying to get out of the situation, you might get more than you bargained for. So you want to really look at the big picture and try to figure out what it is that you really are trying to get out of this situation and talk to them and communicate with them to get to that end. Rule number four, they shout, speak softer and slower. And I think you've seen this I'm sure you've done this in your corporate work. When someone's yelling at you, you usually dial back and get softer and quieter because you can't yell at somebody who's not yelling at you. Eventually, you kind of, like the wind comes out of your sail, and you eventually have to slow down and take a breath. So I think that's a huge problem with parents. Parents get frustrated, and they start screaming, the kids start screaming, and the kids are screaming back, and it gets escalated, and it gets out of control. So, you know, you might eventually get them to calm down, hopefully, you know, and then you can acknowledge their feelings and tell them they're loved and heard and kind of start over from the beginning. Talk to them, not at them. I think that's just normal communication with everybody. No one likes to be told what to do. You know, you want to give them some respect. If you use the word I all the time, you know that you'll find out that you're doing this. So parents, check your words. I hate to sound like a kindergarten teacher. Use your good words. If you're an I person, you know, I want you to do this. I'm fed up. I'm tired of. I'm whatever, then you're too self-absorbed and you're not present with them and you're not really in the conversation. Number six, you got to value their opinions. You know, they might be smarter than you. In fact, in a lot of ways, they probably are. And, you know, they don't show up all the time, but they're really, really smart. Kids are a lot smarter than we were. They know a lot more than we do, and they really do have valuable opinions. And you need to respond and not correct or criticize a response from them. Give them the respect that their opinion is valued and that they have a brain and that they're using it. It might not be giving you the response you want to hear, but it still is a valuable response and it's their opinion. So, you know, you can always say, oh, I see why you say that, but what if? And ask them another question to get them doing some critical thinking or, you know, that's an interesting response. And what do you think the other side would say? And is it really black or white? To get them some doing some critical thinking if they're staring their, you know, responses in a bad place. Let them be part of the solution. I love that one. Get the kids to help you solve something because it makes their self-esteem and their confidence just escalate like crazy. You know, put an issue on the table. And you know, if they've got something that you don't like that they're doing and they want one thing, you want another, so let's sit down, let's figure out how we can have a win-win situation here. And let them be part of the solution because they'll buy into it better. And then they'll, you know, they'll realize that they actually have a stake in what you said because they help make the rules. Now, I'm not advocating letting your teams make all the rules, but, you know, have them, have them have a discussion about it and let them come up with maybe a very creative way of solving one of the problems. One of my favorite stories is when I have a kid on a caseload, they would come in and I'd always start by asking them, so tell me what happened, because something would have always happened. And I said, and then they would tell me the story, and then I'd ask, so how did that work out for you? And then I would be dead silent. And you could watch the wheels turn. And eventually they come to the conclusion that it didn't work out really well and we need to come up with a better solution. And if you do that, kids are really smart and they will respect you for that. Spell it out. Be specific and detailed. Don't tell a kid to be home early. My son thought early was 3 in the morning. I wanted it as 11. You know, you got to tell kids exactly what you want. I need to have the dishwasher empty, you know, 10 minutes before I'm going to have dinner, and dinner's going to be at 6. And if they do it at 11 minutes, you know, to the hour, and it's done, congratulate them and respect that they did that and that they used their time accordingly, you know. Clean your room is another one. Oh, I hate it when parents say, go clean your room, because I don't know about you, but my kid's idea of cleaning their room and my idea of cleaning their room are two different things. So you have to be very, very specific. You want to say, pick all your clothes up and put them in the washer, that's a different story. Otherwise, they're just going to push them to the side. Give praise. We've already talked about this. You got to give them praise all the time. Praise and, you know, reward are great incentives for continuing good behavior. They really, really are, and for changing behavior. And the last one that I always like to talk about is make them take responsibility, and we also touched on that. The kids need to take responsibility for their actions and the good stuff, too. You know, wow, that was fantastic that you did that. The reason that you did so well in the test is because you really studied. You know, and the other thing is maybe, you know, we need to look at whose fault was that, I mean, who started that behavior, who started that fight. How could we go back and change that behavior? But you need to take responsibility that you were the one that threw the first punch. And that needs to be in there because otherwise you will never have them changing their behavior. So it's kind of my favorite list of 10, kind of the 10 parenting rules.
A lot of great rules. And I would say these are almost paradigms of thinking that parents can adapt and help their children. So a few that really resonated with me was dial back. That if you are in the right frame of mind, speaking to them in the softer voice, kids will dial back. It, again, goes back to the mirror neurons. People do mirror what other people are doing. Mm-hmm. And then specific in your expectations, making them part of the solution. Oh, gosh, I really like all of them, but these were three of mine that were favorite. And before
I love the part of the solution. You're right. That's a great one. It's the critical thinking that we're going to need to move this world forward. Mm-hmm. Because they're thinking, it's not only the behavior aspect. It does teach them to use their imagination and creativity.
It is. And being part of the solution is, you know, gives them skin in the game. And when you have skin in the game and you put the stake in the ground, you definitely take ownership of it.
Right.
So one of the things
mm-hmm.
another question that comes up is, we have talked about, you know, the dial back. So let's say, depending on the parent's behavior, whether it's a response or a reaction to the teen's action, how does that have an impact on children's future behavior? Can you explain that?
Sure. Kids look, they watch, they see everything you do. Whether you know it or not, they do. They notice when you ask one of your friends for a Valium because you're not quite up there today. They know if you're drinking a couple cocktails and getting in the car and driving into soccer. They know if you're breaking the law and rolling through stop signs and saying, oops, I just slid through that one. You know, I mean, they know that. They're seeing everything that you can do, and don't you dare yell at them for drinking and driving if you took a couple cocktails and drove them to the park. They do look at everything you do, and I hate to do this to parents, but parents, you got to look in the mirror first. And I had to do some serious looking in the mirror myself and saying, ew, boy, and taking responsibility yourself for some of the things that they pick up from you. You know, if you're dressing inappropriately, you know, you're dating lots of younger people than yourself, don't get surprised if your kids, promiscuous, if they're dressing inappropriately, if, you know, they get pulled in for having sex with somebody 3 years younger than themselves or dating somebody a lot older, because they're watching what you do. You are their role model, whether you believe it or not. It's a huge responsibility, and you're a role model all the way through their entire life. So you have to remember that, you know, you have a responsibility once you have a kid, even though they don't come with the instruction booklets, that, you know, you have to maintain the role of parent and responsible parent all the way through their life.
Oh, that is so true. And Barb, you mentioned about the book that's coming out, Good Kids, Bad Choices. Please do share with our audience, because you have such a wealth of information that not only the teenagers, but parents will also benefit from it. So please do share with them.
Actually, the book is out. It is available. And it deals with a lot of things, not only the parent, the parenting roles and how to change the behavior. But the reason that I wrote the book is there are a lot of new laws out that the kids don't even know are laws. And there's a lot of normal behavior, at least what they think is normal behavior, that is really illegal. And it has everything from doing the sexting with their phones, with the kind of pictures they're taking, harassing each other on Facebook, and the bullying, both plagiarism and downloading of things on the Internet. A lot of it is cybercrime, and remembering that their phone is actually a computer. So, you know, they can do anything on their phone that they can do on a computer just sitting next to you on the couch. There are a lot of laws that have come into place that the kids don't even know are illegal. And I've asked, I had a lot of classes where I brought things up about, you know, the dating laws and how young can you have relations with someone else, and, you know, and the difference in ages and date rape. And we go into all the different statutory rape and all those kind of things. That's all in there, because I think if parents have the information, they can really, first of all, talk to their kids and let their kids know the truth, that this is something that you can't do because it's illegal. Not just because I don't want you to do it, but because it is illegal. And if you do this, you could end up in jail. And actually, the parent could end up in jail. There's parental responsibility laws in about 23 states right now where the parents can be held liable for what their kids do. So, you know, and once you get a record, even though juvenile records do get expunged or sealed down the line, you're in the system and you're labeled. And it starts a domino effect. And what you want to do is get the kids to understand that the Internet has created a whole new group of things that are really not, they shouldn't be done, and they are illegal, even though everybody is doing it. And social media is one of the big problems right now, because you can bully so easily. They're just words to them and keystrokes. They don't understand that it technically is against the law, and you can end up with a felony. If you threaten to kill somebody on the on Facebook, let's say, you know, somebody stole your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whatever, I'm going to kill you, and somebody press charges, you can go down with a terroristic threat conviction. And I don't think any parent wants their kid to have that on their you know, record, because even though law enforcement can always see their record. And that's just not something you want to mess with. There are a lot of things in there. So that's in there, solid strategies for better communication, you know, how to be a better role model and mentor, you know, how to reset your kid's moral compass, and what to do if a kid gets arrested. In my experience, you leave them in jail. They have to feel the consequences. So there's a whole kind of a plethora of things. So, and it's called Good Kids, Bad Choices, Why Your Kids Are Breaking the Law and How to Get Them to Stop. And because all the kids are breaking the law, so we want to really look at it as, you know, it can be epidemic if the kids are not kind of reined in at this point.
No, this sounds like a wealth of information in the book. So, dear audience and listeners, I invite you to go on Amazon and the website where you can go and check out the book for yourself is, could you share
Good
the website?
Good Kids, Bad Choices. Yep. GoodKidsBadChoices.com. And if you order your book on that, I will, and you put in the, when you enter your shipping address, there's a little box with notes to me. And if you put down the name of the show on Confidence in the code there as a code, I will give you free shipping and I'll sign the book for you and send it out to you so you'll have it. So for your listeners, they don't have to pay that nasty shipping that we pay.
That is so true. Very generous of you. Thank you, Barb. I'm sure our audience will greatly appreciate it. So listeners, do take advantage of Barb's generosity, and from what she has shared, you will get to learn a lot and a lot of good things, especially with social media and the perils of today's world. So this has been great, and Barb, if our listeners wanted to get in touch with you, if they have any more questions, what's the best way to get in touch with you, get to know more about your work?
My website is bevanloon.com. You can get there through the book, through Good Kids, Bad Choices, bevanloon.com. And you can email me at info@bevanloon.com. It comes right to me, and I would just let me know, and I will chit-chat with you and help you any way I can. I do parent one-on-one coaching for kids that are a little bit out of the, off the grid. We can kind of help with that a little bit. But I'm always more than happy to try to see if I can, give you resources or something to help your kids get back on track.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fantastic. It is great to have all that information and information source to go to. So I appreciate your generosity for being open to our listeners, to available so that they can reach you and they can ask you questions.
No, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Do you have
it
any...
is something, again, we're a village, so we have to take care of our kids together.
Oh, absolutely. They are our future leaders and future generation who will not only take care of the planet and our country, but of the whole humanity. So it's our job to raise great leaders, because the baton is going to be in their hands. So are there any other upcoming events or upcoming programs that you would like to share with our listeners?
I am going to be on the Jenny and Jody show on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, kind of a large station show, which will be fun. I'm also going to be coming up pretty soon, and maybe this is something we can talk about later. I've got some kind of fun ideas and or interesting subjects that parents can use to spark conversations with their kids during the holidays, because there's nothing worse than sitting at that Thanksgiving table and the kids are completely quiet. So I have some great topics and kind of debate rules that I'm going to be putting up on the website pretty soon, and I will be putting those up there, which will give you guys some ideas of some things to talk about. But there are rules. You can't just disagree with them. And so some of them are pretty volatile things, like should marijuana be legal? And that will get your kids to talk, because they all have an opinion. So there will be some, kind of hot topics that will kind of get that dinner table moving. And hopefully the other rule, of course, the first rule is everybody put their phones down, turn your phones off, don't have your phones at the table or your iPads. When it's dinner time, sit with your kids and make that a rule. Have an actual meal with your children and talk to them and ask them, about their day. They might not tell you much, but they will remember that, because my own kids now require that of their children. So it does pass it down from the generation. They always knew how important that was to kind of take a break and everybody gather around together and put the phones down. So you have to get off your own phone too, which is sometimes difficult for parents to do, but we'll get them talking. So that's coming up.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic resources. Thank you, Barb, for sharing your resources with our clients and with our listeners. So listeners, please visit Barb's website, check out her book, and you will be finding great resources in them. And also, complementing Barb's book, be on the lookout for my book that's going to be coming out probably by end of October, early November. It's called Unlock Your Future, The 7 Keys to Success. And I am delighted to share that my co-author and myself have decided to donate the proceeds from the launch of the book, probably first 1,200 to 1,500 copies of the book. We are going to be donating money to the local charities, because, as we say, it takes a village to raise a child. And as part of responsibility, we also need to pay it forward. We need to share our resources, our talents, and a little bit whatever we can give in any capacity we can with our community, because that's what forges the bonds between our community, creating that connection. And also, if you need to reach me, feel free to reach out at contact@diviaparekh.com. And it is contact, contact at D-I-V as in Victor, Y-A, P-A-R-E-K-H.com, contact@diviaparekh.com. And listeners, thank you so much for spending your time with us, this precious 1 hour you always take out and spend the time with me. And Barb, it has been such a privilege and honor to have you on the show. Thank you for opening your heart, your wisdom, your knowledge, and sharing everything with our listeners. I am very grateful.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Parents, keep working on your kids. Don't give up on those teens.
Absolutely, no. Again, it's been a pleasure. Thank you again. And until next time, be powerful. Your host, Divya Parekh, takes your leave. Take care. And bye for now.